Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. This is episode 310 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. And in this podcast, I'll be going over a topic that is ridiculously extremely high yield for the USMLE step 1, step 2 CK, and step 3 exams. I'm going to call this the Clutch Knee Exam Podcast. Basically, if you listen to this podcast, because I mean, many of you know this, right? If you take the USMLE exams, they always love to do these things where they will describe different knee examination maneuvers. Excuse me. And then they will try to get you to make a diagnosis based on those specific maneuvers. So, God willing, my goal today is to go over pretty much all the high yield knee maneuvers that your friends at the MBME love to test. And I'll just talk about them in context. And I'll give you all the relevant information you need to know. If you listen to this, you should be good to go from this perspective on exams. And again, I'm going to try to be really make this succinct, but again, just make this very high yield. Again, I can almost promise you, for those of you taking any of the USMLE exams, it literally doesn't matter, step 1, step 2, CK, step 3. And really, if you're taking like your surgery shelf or your emergency medicine shelf or your internal medicine shelf or your family medicine shelf, this is something you're going to find to be extremely helpful. So, in fact, I'll just say this is something you should just listen to if you're a medical student. It will help you out a lot, right? So, the thing is, again, I know Step 2 CS is now a defunct exam. It's not something that's done much anymore. It's not done anymore. But, you know, some people are taking the Complex 2 PE exam, although they haven't made an announcement on that. I think it's like April 30th, where they're supposed to make some kind of announcement. But basically, remember, whenever you're doing a knee exam of any sort, right, you're supposed to inspect first, right? And then after that, you're supposed to palpate. And then after that, you're supposed to, you know, do range of motion, right? So like many people use this mnemonic that you look first and then you feel second and then you move third. OK, and please don't be mad about the thing you may be hearing in the background. It's just some weird acting alarm. I'll have to work on that later. OK. So first thing I guess I'll talk about is what is a valgus test of the knee, right? What is a valgus test of the knee? Basically, this valgus test of the knee is something that is classically done, right? When a person has you have them lie on their back, right? So they lie supine. And then the thing that happens is that you then flex their knees about 30 degrees. Or let's say 20 degrees. You flex their knees 20 degrees, right? So you flex the knee. Flexing the knee is almost like creating a small triangle under the knee, right? So you flex the person's knee, and then you apply a lateral force, right? Remember the L in valgus for the L in lateral. So you're literally pushing on the lateral aspect of the knee, right? The thing is, when you apply that lateral force, you're using it to test the medial collateral ligament, right? And again, that will make sense because the medial collateral ligament is literally on the opposite side of the lateral force, right? So if it's ruptured or something, that if you have like a ton of displacement medially, then that tells you that, oh wow, this person has likely ruptured or torn their medial collateral ligament, right? Now, the opposite is the case, right? A varus test, right? So a varus test, again, the person is lying on their back, they're supine. You flex their knees, right? 20 degrees, right? Again, I know many resources, you see them mention 30 degrees, but really for the most part, 20 degrees is the right thing to do. But 30 degrees is not wrong, but 20 degrees is really the right thing to do. So again, they lie on their back and then you apply a medial force, right? So that's a varus test, right? You apply a medial force, right? If you get excessive lateral displacement of the knee, right? That tells you the person has ruptured their lateral collateral ligament, or at least they've torn it of some sort, right? And the thing is, right, so we've kind of talked about the collateral ligaments. Well, what are those anterior and posterior ligaments, or what does the MBME kind of want you to know about those? Well, remember that, you know, if you suddenly slow down when you're running, or, you know, if you, let's say you're running or you're twisting your leg and you suddenly slow down, right? And let's say, for example, the lateral aspect of the person's knee is smashed. Unfortunately, that can actually tear the person's ACL, right? Or if, for example, a person has like a tibial dislocation posteriorly, that can tear the PCL, right? And the thing is, to assess these ACL, so anterior cruciate ligament, or PCL, posterior cruciate ligament tears, right? You use drawer signs, right? So Let's talk about the anterior drawer sign and the posterior drawer sign. And then I'll talk about one other sign for an ACL tear, right? But basically, for the anterior drawer test for an ACL tear, right, the person is going to, again, lie on their back. They're going to lie supine, right? But now, instead of having the knee joint held in flexion for 90 degrees, you're going to hold it in flexion for, I mean, instead of holding the knee joint in flexion for 20 degrees, you're actually going to hold it in flexion for 90 degrees, right? You're going to hold it in flexion for 90 degrees. And then when you do that, you then pull the tibia forward, right? So the thing is, usually whenever you're doing a knee exam, you want to compare it with the unaffected knee, right? So if you notice that, oh, wow, this tibia moves anteriorly a lot more than the unaffected knee, that's a positive anterior drawer test. The person has an ACL tear, right? Exact same deal is what you do for a PCL tear. Again, they lie on their back, hold their knees in flexion 90 degrees, right? And then push posteriorly. If you notice that, oh, wow, the tibia moves posteriorly relative to the femur, a lot more than the unaffected knee, that's a positive posterior drawer sign. Sadly, the person has torn their posterior cruciate ligament, right? But remember, for the anterior cruciate ligament, another thing you can do on an MBME exam is actually something called the Lachman test. So let me tell you this. If they give you an MBME question where you suspect that a person has an ACL tear and they put anterior drawer sign as an answer in terms of diagnostic testing, and they put, like physical exam and over, and they put the Lachman test, pick the Lachman test over the anterior drawer test because it's more sensitive, right? Again, it's kind of similar though. It's just the angle that's a little different, right? So you basically, again, flex the person's knee, but you do it 20 degrees, not 90 degrees. You flex the person's knee 20 degrees, and then you pull the tibia forward, right? Again, if you have excessive anterior displacement relative to the unaffected knee, that tells you that the person likely has some kind of ACL tear. Right now, the thing is, there are two high yield things to know on MBME exams in relation to ACL tears. The thing is, when a person tears their ACL, it actually is usually associated with some kind of fracture of the lateral tibial plateau, right? So like the plateau of the tibia, kind of like the crest of the tibia on the lateral side, tends to tear quite frequently when people have ACL tears. That's one. The second one is, whenever a person has a meniscal tear, you need to assess those people on MBME exams for ACL tears, right? Whenever a person tears a meniscus, right, always, always on MBME exams, assess them for an ACL tear. Because again, many times a tear in a meniscus is usually associated with an ACL tear as well, right? It's just an association to kind of keep at the back of your mind for MBME exams, right? And then the thing is, obviously you also need to know how to assess the menisci on MBME exams, right? So let's kind of talk about meniscal tears, right? Meniscal tears. I mean, usually the buzzwords you may see in the question is, they may tell you that the person has like a clicking or a catching or a locking of their knees, right? So they may have like a clicking, a catching, or a locking of their knees, right? And usually there'll be like joint line tenderness, right? So they may have like medial joint line tenderness, or they'll have like lateral joint line tenderness, right? But again, unfortunately, that's not going to tell you exactly what's going on, because having lateral joint line tenderness means that you could have a lateral collateral ligament tear or lateral meniscal tear. Having medial joint line tenderness will also mean that you either have a medial collateral ligament tear or a meniscal tear. Although, if they just give you like medial joint line tenderness and they don't put both as answers, then whichever one they put is going to be correct, right? Because just by process of elimination, it will make sense that that's the right thing to do, right? So let's talk about the actual diagnostic testing you're going to do for these meniscal tears, right? So the big one you want to remember for your exam is the McMurray test, right? The McMurray test is MC, right? MC and then a big M, URRAY, right? The McMurray test, right? Basically, the thing that happens, again, these people are going to lie down supine, right? You're going to lie them on their back, right? And then they're going to essentially put the knees in 90 degrees of flexion, right? And then the thing is, you're going to use one hand to support the person's knee, especially the anterior knee, right? Basically, you're going to place one hand and your thumb, right? Your big thumb is going to be on the medial joint line, and then your index finger is going to be on the lateral joint line, right? So you're going to use your two hands for this test. One hand is going to be on like in front of the knee joint, right? And your thumb is going to be on the medial joint line. Your index finger is going to be on the lateral joint line, right? And then use your other hand to control the person's heel, basically to modulate the person's foot, right? And then the thing is, when you then grab the person's heel, apply a valgus force, right? So remember, a valgus force is a lateral force. So you apply that valgus force while you're externally rotating the person's leg, right? With that other hand that's on the foot, right? So apply a valgus force, right? Although you hold more the heel, right? Like the back of the foot, right? So you apply some kind of valgus force, right? So again, remember that's a lateral force. And then you're using that hand on the foot to try to externally rotate the leg, right? That's how you test the medial meniscus. If we're thinking about the lateral meniscus, it's kind of the same deal, right? You apply a varus force, right? So that's a medial force, right? And then you internally rotate the leg. So you may say, oh, Divine, how do I remember this? Valgus, varus, blah, 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 internal, external rotation. Let me give you a nice mnemonic here, right? Just remember how you test the lateral meniscus and take all the opposites for the medial meniscus, right? Here's the mnemonic I use for the lateral meniscus. I use the term virus, V-I-R-U-S. I literally use the term virus, V-I-R-U-S, right? V-I-R-U-S, V-I-R-U-S, right? That's for the lateral meniscus, virus lateral meniscus, virus lateral meniscus. What does virus mean? Well, the V-I-R will help you remember that, oh, wow, I'm going to apply a virus force, a medial force, right? And then, again, the same virus helps you, like the IR helps you remember that, oh, you're going to do an internal rotation of the person's leg, right? And again, the thing is, whenever you're doing both of these maneuvers, right? Again, make sure that one hand is on the knee, and then make sure the other, hand is on the, person's foot. Right. So again, one hand on the knee and the other hand on the foot. And then I guess one thing I will say is while you're performing the test, remember I said you start the person, you know, the starting position is 90 degrees of flexion. As you're doing the test, I'm doing these, you know, internal, external rotation movements. You are slowly extending the person's knee. Right. So again, virus mnemonic. Right. So again, virus force, internal rotation, right, of the person's leg. That's how you test the lateral meniscus. Right? Valgus force, that's a lateral force. External rotation, that's how you test the medial meniscus, right? So again, these are the ways you essentially test these menisci, right? And again, while you're doing this test, if you hear like a click or a pop, or you have like a catch at the respective joint line, so if it's like the medial joint line, it's a medial meniscus tear. If it's the lateral joint line, it's a lateral meniscus tear, right? Another test you can also use to test these menisci, right? There's this thing called the Apley, A-P-L-E-Y, right? The Apley compression test, right? This one, instead of lying these patients on their back, right? That's supine. You're going to lie them on their belly, right? That's prone, right? So you place them in the prone position, right? So they're on the, lying on their belly, and then you flex the knee to 90 degrees, right? And then you stabilize those people's hips with one hand, and then use the other hand to, you know, so you stabilize their hip with one hand, kind of keep it flat, and then use the other hand to grasp their feet and then compress that foot downwards, right? And while you're compressing those people's feet downwards, internally and externally rotate their legs, right? Internally and externally rotate their legs, right? If you notice that, oh, wow, while you're compressing their foot downwards, right, against their knees and internally and externally rotating the legs, if you notice that, oh, wow, they have a lot of pain, right, then that person essentially has some kind of meniscus tear. I mean, and that test that's super low yield, so I'm not really going to talk about it. I'm just going to say it for completeness sake. It's called the Thessaly test, right? So T-H-E. Double S-A-L-Y, the Thessaly test. It's also used to assess meniscal tears, right? Now, some other things that you may see with the knee joints that I think I should just maybe go ahead and talk about. Again, if they give you a question about a person and they tell you that, oh, this person, you know, has just had trauma to the person's knee, or the person kneels down a lot, and then they tell you that, oh, the person has like pain, has redness, has swelling right in front of the patella, right? The thing you want to think about on MDM exams is that the person likely has some kind of prepatellar bursitis, right? They have some kind of prepatellar bursitis. And the way you deal with a prepatellar bursitis is you just aspirate and you drain that bursitis, right? And then what if they tell you that, oh, a person, you know, was maybe playing sports or whatever, right? And they hear, you hear like a, they heard like a pop sound. And after you heard that pop sound, they are not able to straighten their knees. Basically, they cannot extend their knees. And if you notice that, oh, they tell you in the question that they have a lot of pain, they have a lot of swelling, they have like a palpable defect, right? Along the superior region of the patella, right? That, you know, that's basically where the quadriceps tendon inserts. If they give you that presentation on an exam, what should you be thinking about? Well, I really hope you're saying that, oh, these people likely have some kind of quadriceps rupture, right? That's the way a quadriceps rupture will present for you on an MBM exam, right? So again, they're participating in some kind of physical activity, right? They hear a pop and then they cannot straighten their knees anymore, right? Basically, they cannot extend their legs, I mean their knees, right? If you see that, and again, they have like palpable problems along the superior portion of the patella, you want to think about some kinds of quadriceps rupture, right? They've ruptured their quads. And then I want to teach something. These questions really, 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 really annoy people, right? Where they'll put many different things. I don't know, the NBME, they have this weird love for the region just below the patella, right? They have this weird love for the region just below the patella, right? Like the inferior border of the patella, right? The inferior border of the patella. So the thing is, I'm going to teach you a very nice trick. If you follow this trick and commit it to memory, you'll be like in excellent shape for these below the patella questions, right? And guess what? I'm going to go from medial to lateral. Right? So again, the region I'm talking about here is below the patella, right? Below the inferior border of the patella, right? So if they tell you that, oh, below the patella, a person has tenderness. So I'm going to be talking about different points of tenderness. If a person has tenderness at the medial joint line, right? Again, just below the patella, the person likely has some kind of medial collateral ligament or medial meniscal tear, okay? That's what you see on MBM exams. Now, let's keep going medially, right? Now, if you notice, you should do this right now to yourself. Well, don't do this while you're driving. Do this if you're sitting, you know, in a good position. But basically, if you feel your patella, if you notice below your patella, there is this big bulge, this very solid bone that kind of bulges out just beneath your patella. That is actually the thing called the tibial tuberosity, right? The tibial tuberosity. Now, between that medial joint line, right? Again, the medial joint line is the medial part just below your patella, right? If you go halfway between that medial joint line and your tibial tubercle, right? Your tibial tuberosity, right? And there's tenderness in the middle. So notice, we first started at the medial joint line. That's the most medial. And then we move a little bit to the region that's basically one half the space between the medial joint line and the tibial tuberosity. If a person has tenderness midway, right? You should be thinking about something called Pes anserin bursitis. Pes being P-E-S, and then anserin being A-N-S-E-R-I-N-E. Pes anserin bursitis, right? But if you then keep going medially and they tell you that, oh, the person has tenderness over the anterior tibial tubercle, that's actually Osgood-Schlatter disease, right? That's going to be Osgood-Schlatter disease. Remember, another name, because remember, the NBMEs, they love to use like many names for the same thing. Another name for Osgood-Schlatter disease on MBM exams is traction apophysitis. I'll say that again. Traction apophysitis, A-P-O-P-H-Y-S-I-T-I-S, right? But then, if you keep moving laterally, right? If you have tenderness at the lateral joint line, right? That's an LCL tear or a lateral meniscal tear, right? So again, and then I guess if you go super, super lateral, right, to like the lateral femoral condyle, right? Although this one is higher, right? It's kind of like above the patella, right? If you have like tenderness along the lateral femoral condyle, right? Then you want to think about something called iliotibial band syndrome, right? Iliotibial band syndrome. Many times if you know where the tenderness is, and they usually give this in the question, you know exactly what you're dealing with. And I guess if you go all the way to even the back of the knee, right? If you go to the back of the knee and there's pain, there is a swelling behind the knee, right? You want to think about a Baker cyst, right? Sometimes they'll say that, oh, there's tenderness and swelling in the popliteal fossa. If you see that, you want to think about some kind of Baker cyst, right? So again, let's go from medial to lateral real quick again. Again, medial joint line, just below the patella, think about an MCL, so medial collateral ligament, or a medial meniscal tear, right? And then if you go more medial, again, halfway the distance between the medial joint line and the tibial tuberosity, right? And there's tenderness there, that's Pes anserin bursitis. If a person has tenderness at the tibial tubercle, right? At the tibial tubercle, the anterior tibial tubercle, that's Osgood-Schlatter disease. If they have tenderness on the lateral joint line, right? That's either a lateral meniscal or a lateral collateral ligament tear. If you go superlateral, but you go a little higher, just above the patella, the lateral femoral condyle, and the person has tenderness there, then you can see that the person has iliotibial band syndrome. And then if you go all the way back to the back of the knee, the popliteal fossa, and the person has like tenderness and swelling there, think about a Baker cyst on an MBM exam. right? And then as I wrap up, how do you assess for effusion at a person's knee? How do you assess for effusion at a person's knee? Well, basically what you should do on NBM exams is the, or, you know, in clinical practice, is the milking technique, right? Although, again, I feel like I should add this disclaimer. This podcasts, any of, none of my podcasts are meant to, they're not made for clinical care, whatever. They are made for exam purposes, right? Again, I just feel like I kind of need to throw out that disclaimer. Okay, we're kind of living in a strange world these days, right? So in terms of effusions, right? So remember, when you're trying to test for a knee effusion, you're going to milk medially, right? So basically, you go to the medial portion of the knee joint, and then you milk from bottom to top, right? So you meet for your milk, right? So you basically milk from inferior to superior. And then after that, you then milk laterally from superior to inferior, right? So you milk medially from bottom to top, and then you milk laterally from top to bottom, right? And then if you notice that there's a medial bulge, right? The person has a knee joint effusion. And then one final thing I want to talk about as a knee test you may see on your exam is something called Clark's test, right? Clark's test. Clark is spelled C-L-A-R-K-E, Clark's test, right? Basically, it's a test where you essentially straighten the person's legs, right? So you extend their knees. And then the thing that then happens is you then ask the patient to try to like contract their quadriceps. How do you contract your quadriceps? Just make your thighs very tight, you know, like tighten your thighs, right? And as you're doing that, the examiner is going to be pressing against like the upper part of your patella, the superior pole of your patella, to basically prevent it from moving, right? If you notice that, oh wow, the person has a lot of pain while you're doing this, this is actually on NBM exams, if you see this and they're trying to get you to pick a diagnosis, I want you to think about patellofemoral pain syndrome, right? I want you to think about patellofemoral pain syndrome on your exam. Okay, patellofemoral pain syndrome on your exam. So I think I'm going to go ahead and stop here. Again, and in the future, God willing, I'm going to make a lot of ortho podcasts because these bone disorders and stuff, it just kind of messes people up on exams, but it doesn't need to. Most of these bone pathologies actually have like pretty decent pathophysiology behind them, right? So hopefully in the future, you know, God keeping me alive and giving me time, I'll be happy to make those podcasts. So again, as I do at the end of every podcast, I do offer one-on-one tutoring for many exams. Step one, step two, CK, step three, preclinical med school exams, third year clerkship shelf exams. And then I do help with applications, like ERAS applications. Again, I've been on an admissions committee for a year, and I've worked with lots of people that are now residents that had tricky applications. So people that were, you know, they failed step one or they failed step two, or they don't have research or something to that nature, right? They have all these red flags. They graduated 10 years ago. If any of those situations apply to you, I've worked with lots of people in those categories that are now residents, right? And even for the super competitive specialty, neurosurgery, orthopedic surgery, ENT, dermatology, right? I mean, I've literally worked with even people from backgrounds, right? Like academic backgrounds, let's say their med school is not super well ranked, right? That have matched into this competitive specialty. So again, if any of these things applies to you, just shoot me an email through the website and I'll be more than happy to point you in the right direction. And then I also have my videos on YouTube, right? I have a YouTube channel, Divine Intervention, USMLE podcasts and videos. So subscribe. That's where I have all my videos. Although the slides that go with those videos, you'll find them on the website, Divine Intervention Podcasts with an S at the end, .com, right? And again, if you subscribe to my website, whenever I make a new podcast, you'll get an email notification. And then I also have these podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, at least the most recent 150. So if you're, again, interested in any of those, just download those podcast apps, subscribe to the actual podcast itself, and you can listen to those. But if you want everything all the way from episode one, it's going to be on the website. It's a WordPress rule. I literally have no control over this most recent 150 podcasts rule. So thank you for listening to this. I hope you have a very wonderful day and stay strong. Be well. Take good care of yourselves. And remember that your life is not defined by the score you get on USMLEs, right? But again, as you've always seen me say, put in your best work, right? Don't wait for the last moment. I feel like, unfortunately, there are many med students, many people in healthcare that kind of leave things for the last moment, right? When you leave things for the last moment, you're very likely going to not do a great job, right? Or you're going to do it and do it poorly, right? So just don't leave things for the last moment, right? Because you see some people, their first 2 years of med school, they're not doing diddly squat, right? And then 1 month before step one, they start panicking, right? And they are asking for, what can I do? Can you tell me what my score will be? The thing is, you can kind of know how well you do based on how much good work you put in. Good work, right? Because again, I feel like some people, they work hard, but they don't work smart, right? So you see certain people, they're trying to read a book where book reading doesn't work for them. Or they try to listen to an audio podcast where audio podcasting doesn't work for them, right? So again, the thing is you need to find the method that works for you. And then when you find it, you need to exploit it to your advantage, right? And obviously you also need to be good at test taking to also do well on these exams. But again, I'll just encourage you, don't leave work for the last minute. I guess that's kind of my life lesson for today. So thank you for listening. I'll see you next time. God bless you. Thank you.